Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We've got good news. The world is open again, and people like you, people of faith, are traveling to Catholic sites around the world. Want to travel with exceptional Catholic leaders this fall, next year, or in the future? Are you looking to see specific sites, celebrate traditional Latin Mass, or travel to destinations without vaccine requirements? We are here to help you deepen your faith on pilgrimage. Give us a call at 1-800-842-4842 or visit us online at selectinternationaltours.com. Select International Tours is your pilgrimage company, and we have the perfect Catholic trip for you.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Here's to good friends.
Cheers.
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 That's sort of an oaky afterbirth.
What was that?
She did tell me to get a beer and some cheese fries over at Eskimo Joe's.
That's very nice, lovely. I only hope you feel this way when I'm done. Because I could destroy this night in 2 seconds.
Why is that funny?
Well, I think it's a bit funny to be trying to define nothing.
Smooth as a bourbon on a summer day. Strong as a peated scotch in the winter night. This is a fair warning. The Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go. We're burning daylight.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam and Ann here sitting with David Niles, Juan on the buttons this evening. And we have El Jim here tonight with us as well. He was gone last, was it last week?
Yeah, that's Spanish for the gym.
Yes.
For those who don't speak Spanish.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think the listener does, too.
I feel like, you know, you're just so used to talking to me and hanging out with me.
So much insight.
And you forget that, like, oh, some other people, like, don't basically speak Spanish.
Right.
Like I do, basically.
I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
And I think the listener does, too.
Yeah. So I just want, for those of you who don't speak Spanish.
El Gym.
The gym.
Yeah.
Which is also El Suite, which is Spanish for the suite.
Starting off with a bang. Oh,
so
man.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, Jim. Thank you so much for being here.
Do you know, I think this is hilarious, because we're like doing, we do some Spanish words with the kids, right?
So you do?
Pamela made like this sign that said in Spanish, like, would you pass me the blank, por favor? And like, pass me is literally pasame. Pasame. Pasame, Juan. It literally is just pasame. All one word. Hilarious. I love it. Like, in Latin, if you were to say he ate it, the verb is ate it. That's how you say he ate something.
Mm-hmm.
The verb you use is ate it. Awesome. I can remember those. Those are the ones I like.
Because, I hope that one's like, on the test.
Got that one.
Yeah.
I can remember that. I got it locked
that
in.
In my capabilities.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, this evening we're drinking Templeton Rye whiskey. We've been on a rye kick a lot, I think, recently, haven't we?
I don't think on purpose, but yeah, we had that one. What was the one that was like, it was a blended, it had some rye in it recently,
mm-hmm.
and that we really liked. What mm-hmm. was that one? I don't remember.
Was it Old Forester, 1920?
I don't remember.
Okay. So it didn't even matter if I tell you what it is.
I mean,
the
sure.
The Caribou Blue?
No, I don't think it was that.
Corner Creek?
I don't remember drinking that one.
Yeah, it has the little caribou on the top. Anyway.
I don't remember. Whatever. But yes, yeah, I think we have been on somewhat of a rye kick. This is a 10-year-old rye.
Yes.
So I'm interested, because we've had Templeton Rye before.
We've had the 4. I think we may have even had the 6. I can't recall.
I don't know what their selection. I mean, I don't know what they offer, but we haven't had the 10-year.
So
I'm excited about this.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers. Juan, do you want to give a toast? You haven't given a toast maybe in a while. Do you want to give a toast?
Who's he toasting to?
I don't know. Whoever he wants to.
To Mr. Templeton?
If he... I don't know.
Mr.
Do you want to say anything, Juan?
I'll give a toast.
Okay.
To the 13 fallen Marines that we had this week. I raise my glass to their bravery in the protection of others. And I ask that they may intercede on our behalf, if that be God's will, to encourage us in the battle of spiritual and earthly struggles that we have. So cheers to you, and thank you for your service.
You're here.
You're here. The nose, like, so I like nosing rye whiskeys because it's always very impactful. It's very in your face. It's very much like peated scotch, like on the same realm of peated scotch. Like when you nose a rye whiskey, it's kind of equivalent to nosing a peated scotch.
Yeah, don't dive right in. Like, don't get too deep.
Right. Yeah.
Like, singe your nose hairs or something.
Yeah. So it has this like toasted brown sugar, vanilla. A little, like, caramel.
Mm-hmm.
Do I say caramel or caramel?
I say caramel. And honestly, like, if you say caramel...
That's fine. You're just wrong.
Right. It's just like, come on. Why are you being weird? Why are you being weird?
Why are you being weird? What was it like?
So, I get, like, dried licorice. When I... Like, that's really what... That's what hit me. It was not what I expected it to be. You know what I mean? It doesn't taste like what I thought it was going to taste like.
I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's, man, I'm not sure. I can't put my finger on this.
There's something else there that, yeah, I'm trying to, like.
I can't.
It's something else that I know. It's a flavor that I am saying, I know what that is.
I can't put my, what do you think, Jim? Is this on your yummy scale?
Yes. It is yummy.
It's
Jim
yummy.
Has a pass, fail, yummy, or
I
not.
I do some sherry.
No, it's more than pass, fail, yummy. Sometimes it's more than yummy, and I forget what he says then. But
muy yummy.
But, like, for the most part, it's yummy or not.
Yeah.
Which, personally, I like.
So this is about this a $90 bottle.
Tasty.
Wow.
So, it's on the more expensive side.
That is on the expensive side. It seems like rye whiskeys are like that, where you can have some rye whiskeys that are, you know, expensive.
Oh. Speaking of expensive whiskeys, you know what we need to do? Tell me. Have a baby bottle coming up that we need to figure out quickly.
Mm.
So, Juan's beautiful wife, Joan, is about... What, 36 weeks, 35 weeks, something like that?
No.
Oh, maybe 30?
It's due in December.
Oh, it's due in December.
Okay, we got time.
We have time. Good. Good. There's somebody else, one of our friends that is 34.
Derek
Lissy. Derek Lissy. Whitney.
If you have any suggestions for us as the listener,
tweet us. Hey, why don't you tell us what our baby bottle is?
So we started this a long time ago as a... Like a way to justify buying an expensive bottle of scotch to
with
our
Elizabeth,
wives. Yeah, with Elizabeth, my oldest, and so what we do is like we pool our money and we buy a really nice bottle of scotch. And in the past, what we've done is we've all had one pour, and you know, at the end we mark a Sharpie because none of us trusted each other, so like not sip, you know, just like little nips.
I don't
just
do
a little nip
siphoning
here
off
and there.
Yeah,
exactly. But and then we would mark, like, you know, whose baby it is. So now we've gotten to the point where, and we've added a couple people, like sometimes, you know, have been drinking it with us, and so it's like, well, when you have like more than one pour between four people, or if there's, especially if there's more, that's just like a whole bottle of whiskey, right? Mm-hmm. So now we just buy one bottle for each baby, and that is the baby bottle. We celebrate when one of us, I didn't even say part, when one of us has a baby,
right?
We celebrate by buying this nice bottle of scotch or whiskey or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want it to be something that's like, you know, expensive. beyond something we're not going to have on a regular basis.
Like it's hard for me to justify a $100 bottle, but if we're all throwing in $100 and we can get a $300 bottle,
right?
That's pretty epic.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing. So if you have any good suggestions for us, tweet us at The Catholic Man Show.
Yeah.
And tell us what you think we should get.
I remember what rye was it? It was the rabbit hole rye that we had last time.
We haven't had that in a long time.
That was a long time ago. But one, I brought that one again thinking, oh, we haven't had this one. And that was the one that we had had already. Okay.
So we're like 3 weeks out, I think, from the camp out. And Juan told me today that he has finalized the menu for the camp out. He said he was driving back from Veneta, and he was getting very tired. And he was thinking, what can I do that would like get me excited, like get me pumped up? And he goes, I know what I'll do. I'm gonna finalize the Catholic Man Show menu. And he said from then on he didn't blink. He was so excited.
And he started doing, what do you call that? You know, when people like get excited and they
clap their hands,
swing their hand back and forth and it makes a slapping sound. Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
What do you call that?
What's that called?
I don't know. I could see him doing that. He's getting excited. What
I've heard it called Brazilian snap.
The Brazilian snap?
I've heard it called like that, but I don't
know. Nice.
That could work.
Anyway, I'm really pumped about that. That's going to be awesome.
Is it a secret?
What?
What the menu is?
Oh, I don't know. He didn't tell me.
Oh, okay. We'll keep it a secret then.
Yeah, don't tell us one. Yeah.
Don't spoil it.
Dave, how's are you finalizing your reading, like that Acedia book? Have you completed that?
I am over halfway. No, I knock out like a page or two a week.
Okay. So in 2027, we are going to have...
I'm over halfway.
We are going to have a great book on Acedia. That is hilarious.
But the thing is, it's been a week.
I would finish it, but I'll just wait till tomorrow.
Well, so I have sometimes 5 minutes at the end of adoration to read. And so I will. And it's just a slow way to do it because it's been a week. So it's let me go back a page so I can refresh my mind, get back on track and you know, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. And then you get about two pages in and, well, time to go. Thanks, Jesus. See you later.
Great hanging out.
Yeah.
All right. When we get back, we're going to talk about how sin is bad this week. This is something that we all
sin
should know.
Very bad.
So when we get back, we'll talk about the gear that'll go into our topic. We'll be right back. This segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker. Go to thecatholicwoodworker.com for heirloom quality home altars, crucifixes, and rosaries.
It's also the only place where you can get the official rosary of the Catholic Man Show. Type in promo code TCMS for 10% off all purchases. TCMS for the Catholic Man Show. CatholicWoodworker.com. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We've got the gang all here. We got Adam. I'm sorry. We got Juan and Jim. Adam is here, though.
I am here.
I did say that, though, already. We're drinking a little Templeton 10-year rye, which is good.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it hits my $90 threshold.
No.
But, you know, I'm kind of known for hating on expensive whiskeys.
That's true.
Yeah.
You do.
The one, though, that I've said before, Octomore, was incredible.
That one was delicious.
That one, it absolutely
was worth
blew
it.
My mind.
Yeah.
It was worth it, especially since I didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Definitely made it worth it.
All the whiskeys are worth it if I don't have to pay for it.
That is true.
Yeah.
Good point there, Adam.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about sin. We're going to talk about prayer. We're going to talk about the man gear today is actually going to be a book. We've talked about it before. I don't think we've actually had it as a gear, but it's called Intro to Devout Life by St. Francis de Sales.
This is the translation that I have. It's from Paraclete Giants, and it looks really big, right? It looks like a big book.
It does look big.
However, the reason why I like this book is this translation is because it's actually the length of it is actually half of this. So on the
pictures on the other half,
coloring. On the left side is the actual translation. On the right side are all of his footnotes, or all of his like commentary.
The translator's
commentary, and he's really good at translating, at translating. Yes, but his commentary,
really good at like knowing the words.
His commentary is really helps you as you're going in to understand.
I can see that.
Who he's writing to, what his purpose is, and so
just giving context into like what he's saying,
right?
You know? Because that's a huge part of what you're writing,
right? And as you can tell, like if you use a page, basically every two pages is one page of commentary. It really helps you.
Every page is one page of commentary, right?
Right,
but one page of the translation gets one page of commentary.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's one.
So it's really helpful. This is a book that I try to go back and read once a year. I don't always go back. You know, it's not always, but it's one of those I'm now picking up again to read during adoration. And the reason why I'm doing that, I have to thank my spiritual director for this, because in one of my last spiritual direction meetings. Is that what you call them?
Yeah. Sure.
He told me to categorize the books that I read into three categories.
Yeah. And I remember telling you that, and like, as your spiritual director, giving you that advice.
You're definitely not my spiritual director. although you have helped me in my spiritual life.
I could be if you asked
quite
me.
Quite a bit. Sure. So he asked me to categorize the books that I read into three different categories. One is the type of book that you would bring to adoration that would elevate your heart and soul to Christ. You know, yeah, that you don't actually read, you know, page to, you know, every single page really fast. It's one of those like Divine Mercy Faustina book,
yeah,
her diary.
Yeah.
Like that's not a book that you just run through really fast. It's a slow book.
Even if you try, you can't.
Right. It's really big.
Really long.
Right. Intro to the Valley.
Even though they print it in this tiny little booklet, thing.
You're thinking like, oh, this won't take me long.
I got it. And it's like, all right, that's
very kind of manageable.
I can read, right? Then that you realize the pages, these are the thinnest pages like known to man.
Mm-hmm.
Like we broke the barriers of physics when we printed these pages and how thin they are.
Yeah. So he said, put it into that category. And another category is one like that you put fiction books, things that are just for fun books. And the other category is books that push you intellectually. And he said, like, figure out where, you know, how, when you're reading books, where it falls into. And that way you understand kind of like what you're reading, what you should be reading. Maybe you stop reading a little bit of one of these to help with the other side. And so one of the books that I had been reading was Intro to the Valley Life during adoration, typically. I try to read like maybe one or two pages in adoration, then kind of stew over it.
That is the proper thing to do in adoration, really, is I used to go to adoration, and that would be my spiritual reading time. You know, it's not like I was reading fiction. You know, mm-hmm, I was reading good, holy books.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I got a lot out of that. But really the better thing to do is to bring something like this book where you can read maybe a sentence, maybe a paragraph, maybe a page,
mm-hmm,
maybe a chapter, but then stop and meditate on that, like before the Lord, like, the purpose of bringing a book to adoration is not to read the book, but is to have the book be a launching point into a deeper union with Christ.
Right.
Like, now, it's sort of like the monk they asked, is it okay to smoke a cigar while you're praying? And he said, no, but it's okay. It's a great idea to pray while you're smoking a cigar. Okay, so like if this is your adoration time, you should use it wisely. Don't show up just to finish your book. But if you have a book, a spiritual book you would like to finish, you can go to adoration to read it. Do you see the difference?
Mm-hmm, I do.
because there's a key distinction. Like, if this is your adoration hour, this is like, if you're listening to us and you don't have an adoration hour, you need to get one. Like, if you're serious about growing in holiness and you don't have a weekly hour of adoration, then you're fooling yourself. You're actually not all that serious, or you just didn't know that was an essential thing. And so now I'm telling you that it's, you have to have a,
you need to spend time with our Lord,
an hour in adoration every week. If you want to grow in holiness, it's an essential element. Mm-hmm. So if that's your hour, guard it well. That's time for meditation. But feel free to come and spend more time with him doing other things. Like, I know people who would go and do their homework in adoration, and, you know, like, depending on what the setting is, I mean, I think that could be okay. I mean, as long as you're not bothering other people, and you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you can go and do other things with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That's good too.
Absolutely.
Sorry, that was a tangent.
No, I liked it. No, it was good. But so the intro to the Vow Life is basically like having a spiritual director.
Yeah. So tell a bit. So it's Francis de Sales. He's writing this. Give it like the premise of the book.
So he's writing to a lay woman, actually. Uh-huh. on basically how to get into a serious life of holiness. Like, what are the proper steps to do? Like, how I like it also because it's very pragmatic. Like, it's very like practical. You understand, here's the steps. Mm-hmm. You want to know it? Here are the steps to grow in holiness. And so that's what we'll be talking about today as
and
well.
It's written for a layperson.
It is written for a layperson. Yeah. Did I not say that?
You did. You say that. But okay. I just think that, you know, a lot of these books, some of the writings of St. Thomas Aquinas or whatever, they're writing to other monks or fellow priests, you know, when they're talking about holiness from, like, because holiness is approached differently from different,
depending
with different vocations,
your,
you know.
Vocation, sure.
It's approached differently as a mother than it is as a father, even. So, it's nice that here is a saint, and Saint Francis de Sales, is his writings are incredible. I mean, he's like the man. And so, like, he's writing this to a layperson, right, not to another monk, which is, makes an important distinction.
Absolutely, it does. Yes. And I also like it because like I said, it's very pragmatic. So, like, when he talks about prayer, which we'll talk a little bit about today as well, but when he talks about, like, here's how to like develop mental prayer, he stops the book and he writes, I think, 10 or 12 different meditations to go through. And here's how you meditate. Like, so you meditate on hell, you know, and then meditate on heaven, and then meditate on what sin is, meditate on what virtue is, meditate. Mm-hmm. And, like, so he goes through all these things and how to meditate on these and the proper way to meditate on them. And then he'll get back to the book. So it's not just a go meditate on sin and then move, and he moves on. It's like, no.
He tells you how to do it.
Here's how you meditate on sin.
That's good.
Which
That's
is
good.
For me, for a guy who needs that kind of direction, is really good.
I think this is a book that every Catholic needs in their library.
I agree.
I mean, this is a book that you won't just read and then, like, sit on your shelf as like a trophy, which also is nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, when your other Catholic friends come over, you can be like, oh yeah, I read that book, it was awesome, let's talk. And then you can talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes just having it there launches a good conversation, and you get to brag a little bit that you did. Oh, I did read a, yeah, I read A Story of a Soul, of course. I mean, come on, you haven't read it? Are you serious?
Yeah.
But this is one that you'll actually go back and pick up again and again and again, right, because you could just start over. When you finish, just start over.
Yes.
You know, and keep going through it again.
It's on the same level to me as, like, Ways of Mental Prayer.
Or The Life of Christ.
Kind of Christ.
It's similar in that
devotion
way.
True Devotion.
Yes.
From Louis de Montfort.
Yeah.
I mean, all
I think Life
kind
of Christ is similar, that it's, you know, like, oh, here's things for you to work on, you know, where you could just read one page.
Yeah.
And that's enough. You don't need to ever read more than one
How is
page.
Your spiritual direction going?
I haven't been in a while. It, you know, we got my spiritual director, Bishop Slattery. He wasn't seeing people, you know,
for a while
during the coronavirus. I have been since.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the summer, I just haven't had time
you've been gone.
Yeah.
But how's your spiritual life?
It has been better. It has been worse. But it's going well. The Lord loves me a lot.
He does love you a lot. Yes.
And I know that.
That's good.
Yeah. and I feel it in prayer. I've been really getting into, like, and this is something hopefully we can do an episode on. It's like the power of the name of Jesus. And just like, oh, just like that.
Okay.
His name, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's powerful.
That's why I try to bow my head every time.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we get back, we'll jump into this topic, talking about sin, detachment of sin, and the necessity of prayer. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. So we have a men's group that meets every Friday. I did not get a chance to go this week, but you guys talked about something that I want you to tell me about, because I haven't actually asked you about it yet. But you guys had something where you guys were talking about going to Mass every day.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, when we had our episode with the Tierneys a couple weeks ago, Mr. Tierney, I forget his first name. Jim, thank you. He made a comment. Jim. Should have remembered.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, Mr. Tierney. But he made the comment that he tries to go to Mass every day. And on the episode, I tried to hide my shame because I was on camera.
Right.
But it was like, just thinking, why don't I do that? I should totally go to Mass every day if I can. And I can. I totally could most days. Obviously, there are some days where it would be a burden on my family, I think, if I tried to, like, make it a hard and fast rule. No, I have to go, you know, like, it becomes a burden on other people who have to, you know, whatever. But I was just thinking that if I were to die right now and was going to be judged, I would be ashamed of a lot of things. Even in my, like, immediate past, I mean, like, today, yesterday. But I think I would be ashamed that I don't go to Mass every day. Why don't I do that? I should be doing that. We should all be going to Mass more often.
Like, I agree.
If you can go every day, we should totally be doing that.
Pope Pius X said, like,
we?
The Eucharist is the surest and quickest way to heaven.
Yeah.
If we believe that...
I'll bet Jim. Jim, do you go to Mass every day?
Not in a while.
He used... before COVID, you were going every day.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
I agree.
So that's what I was thinking about. And it just so happens that our buddy Scott had... That had been, like, on his heart. He told me for, like, a month or a long time. I forget exactly the time frame. But that when I said that... It was like, oh my gosh, like that was meant for him. And so now he like made a commitment right then and there that day. I'm going to Mass every day. That I can. So like, I'm going to try to start doing that. My plan was to wait until Advent. And what I was going to do for Advent was in the first week of Advent, add one extra Mass a week. Cause I used to go on Fridays mornings right after Adoration, but now our men's group is then. And so,
right.
So I was going to add one Mass the first week, add two Masses the second week, three. So on the fourth week of Advent,
you're going,
you know, five Masses total that week.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have to start sooner because like Scott's all gung ho about it. And it's like, well, and I told him, he's like, who's do it with me? And yeah. I was like, well, it was kind of my idea, so I guess I will.
I don't know why you
to take it up so quickly, Scott.
I don't know why you guys have all the best ideas when I'm not there.
Well,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I don't know what the common denominator is, but
how I think just the conversation seems to go so much better. Holier and stuff.
It's probably true. Probably not a lie.
So anyway,
how it really came about was which is in connection to what you were saying earlier, when I asked my spiritual director, we went over some practices, and I was saying, well, I'm struggling to decide whether to commit to an hour of adoration a week or go another day of Holy Mass, because I usually go once a week. And without skipping a beat, he told me, twice a week. Go to Holy Mass twice a week.
Holy Mass for sure.
And then see where it goes from there.
Yep.
So
totally.
Yeah.
It's, I think also
you can't beat the intimate union.
So I had that struggle a few years ago when I was thinking about like either adding another Mass. I think it's during Lent. I was going to try to either pick up another adoration or another Mass, and I was trying to decide which one I was going to do, and I realized I was gravitating towards the holy going to adoration over Holy Mass, and I realized I think the reason why is because I have more control in adoration. I get to do what I want to do.
Yeah, in adoration.
In adoration, I don't at Holy Mass, and I realized okay. Once that thought came into my mind, I thought okay that. That seals the deal.
I mean, Holy Mass, though, you can knock it out in like 20 minutes, depending if you go to the right parish, you know.
Because that's what it's all about. So let's get into the topic. So we're talking about becoming holier, entering into the devout life.
That sin is bad.
And the first thing that he talks about, obviously, we have to stop mortally sinning, right? So there's venial sin, there's mortal sin. Mortal sin separates us from God. There's three things that has to be involved in mortal sin. Dave, they are?
Full knowledge, full consent, and full will.
And grave matter.
Grave matter. Thank you.
Yeah. I was like, you skipped.
And full consent. Yeah. So you have to know it's bad. It has to be bad. It has to be bad. You have to know it's bad. And you have to choose to do it anyway.
Freely anyway.
Yeah.
So we have to have this purification process of stop committing mortal sin. And he obviously says the remedy here is confession. Start going to confession more.
Yeah.
And then he says, I want to get your thoughts on this, because he says you should meditate on four things on what happens whenever you commit mortal sin. He says, by this he means mortal sin. By sin, you have lost the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
You have abandoned your place in paradise. You've accepted the eternal pains of hell, and you've renounced God's eternal love.
Yeah, I mean, those are all true, and it's like by thinking about that, it really puts it in perspective,
right?
What you're doing,
and he has these meditations that follow this on how to actually really meditate upon, like, what does this really mean? What does it really mean that you've abandoned your place in paradise?
Yeah,
what does it really mean that you you're now going to hell?
Mm-hmm.
And he uses like some very descriptive language of like what hell is going to be, how it's going to invade all of your senses. It's not going to be just this fire, you know, that we think of, but it'll invade your senses, like the sense of smell, the sulfur, the screaming, the yelling, the sight of evil, the disparity of not being able to be united with your creator, the one who made you, you're made to be with him, and now you will never be able to be with him.
Yeah,
all these things that happen in hell that we don't actually really think about. Like, I don't really ponder the sense of smell in hell. Right. Or at least
don't even really want to know, actually.
I don't. Well, but by knowing it.
Or at least by pondering that it's a possibility.
Right.
It's possible.
Burnt flesh.
Yes. Burnt flesh. Yeah.
Yeah, I have. It's possible that one day I might know. Because of this sin that I just committed.
Right.
I mean, I think that's really, none of us would sin at all, venial, mortal. I don't think any of us would commit any sins if we actually understood the gravity of even the smallest sin. You know, it's something that we just cannot see on this side of the veil. I think that through meditation like this, you can come to a better, deeper, maybe like fairly good grasp. Mm-hmm. Of the consequences and like the reality of it. What it is, like what you're doing, and to whom you're doing it. But really, we can't fully know it.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes that's a grace. So, I mean, it's a grace most of the time that God does not reveal your true self to you. If you could see yourself in your sins, I think that we would despair, and maybe would just die. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we would just be overcome, and we would just die, if not by the grace of God, right? If we were to have that without His saving intervention. So, for the most part, I think it's a mercy that He doesn't show us our ugliness, The ugliness of our sin. Not, I don't want to say our ugliness as if like we as human beings are right. ugly, because we as people are actually good and beautiful. Mm-hmm. But our sins are hideous.
Right.
Far more grotesque than the most awful thing you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. He also highly recommends and thinks that it's extremely useful to have a general confession. Have you ever made a general confession?
No, I haven't.
So I made a general confession.
I have inquired about it one time.
I made a general confession probably about 6 years ago. And it was... I highly recommend doing it.
Yeah.
So what it is and it takes time to do.
I also would like to do it.
You need to like take it seriously and take your time. So what it is you know, you typically schedule it with a priest and you sit down and you make a quote unquote general confession, meaning all the sins that you can think of from the moment you first sinned to today, of everything that you've ever done.
It's a lot of stuff.
And And that kind of like just, well, I mean, it's just a huge grace bomb of that God gives us of mercy yeah. and repentance and you know, just.
You know what happened to me? I just know this would happen. I would spend like 4 or 5 hours writing stuff down in preparation.
And then forget the list.
And I'd bring it with me and I'd be like, for hours I'd got the list and now I'm going to spend more hours like thinking what else is on the list. Maybe I add a couple things. Then I go and I do my confession. And as soon as I walk out, I remember something else.
I forgot this one.
I remember one other thing. It's like, dang it!
Just turn around and walk right back in. So one of the things he also says in regards to if you're trying to take your, purge, you know, this mortal sin in your life. He says, one of the serious responsibilities of a person committed to a moral and devout life is to avoid as far as possible situations, circumstances, places, or even persons that could possibly encourage one to sin.
Yeah.
Which that is way harder than what it sounds, right? To just completely turn away from things that you've attached to, you like. You know, people you like, places
right.
you like.
Right.
But if you're alcoholic, you avoid bars. He uses that as an example. So it's hard to do. But it's a necessity.
I have stuff to say about this.
All right, we'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
So fortuitous.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about how sin is the worst. It is the worst. It's definitely the worst. You cannot think of anything that's worse than sin.
It's ruined everything.
It's totally the worst.
But it, you know.
There's nothing worse than sin. Nothing. Nope. I just tried to think again, and nope, there's nothing worse than sin. Okay, so I really like this quote about how, like, if you're committed to the devout life, you need to avoid the near occasions of sin, essentially, is what this saying. And I'll just tell you that, like, this is so true because there is a slippery slope that leads to the slippery slope, even.
Ooh.
Okay? There have been times in my life where it was like, I knew I was not going to succumb to this sin. But I enjoyed being tempted by it. Have that ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, that's actually the next part.
Is it?
Yeah,
okay. Because I knew I am not going to do this. But just even being even having the temptation is a little bit thrilling. You know, like, and it was kind of exciting, even just like having the temptation there. And I knowing there is no way I'm going to do that. And I didn't. And I, you know, like, that's happened to me before. But I've, like, you know, finally came to the realization, like, I am just enjoying the temptation, which is a slippery slope to a slippery slope where I actually do that thing.
Yeah. He even says, it's one thing to stop sinning. It's quite another to stop wanting to sin.
Yeah.
Because you've attached your, you know, your intellect, your will to this pleasure that is not, you know, it's not correct. It's not being used to its proper end. And so you're attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you try to break away from it, you know, with virtue. In God, obviously, God's grace, we're not Pelagianists. But,
right. I'm not anyway. I mean,
I'm not either.
Okay.
Just for the record.
Good.
As you're opening my cause for sainthood, on record, I'm not a Pelagianist.
I'll punch you in the face.
Good. Good. St. Nicholas.
Yeah.
But yeah,
St. Nicholas, pray for me! Pray for my fist.
Anyway, I was going to get into a rabbit trail, but we're not going to do that. I'm going to focus.
It would have been a good one, though.
It would have been a good one, but we're going to keep going.
We're not
going
to do it.
So, second purification, once you have started, you know, going to frequent confession and avoiding these temptations, the next thing he talks about is this attachment to sin, right? Because just because you stop doing it doesn't mean you don't have this desire to kind of to still do that. You remember all the pleasure that it caused you.
Right.
You remember, you know, all the endorphins that were released, whatever it is, you've made a habit of this sin. And so in order to, even though if you've stopped doing it, you still have this void of wanting to do it.
Right.
And so he says that there are penitents who leave sin, yet without leaving their longing for sin.
And I think that is, there's nothing you can do about that. That's part of the process.
Well,
you leave the sin, but
because it's damaged you.
It's going to take you. It's not like you can do it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God, we grow in holiness the same way we grow physically. It's slow at first. And then
your biceps just bulge.
Right. Exactly. And then it's just like, this is
ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
And you don't even notice until one day you just look down and you're like, check these guns out.
Yeah.
I didn't. Sweet. I look awesome. But like, you know what I mean? Like a person will grow sort of, babies grow kind of fast and then they stop. And then, you know, a person will hit puberty and they grow fast again. I mean, that's very similar to the way you grow in holiness. You have this conversion experience where you have this change of life.
I'm going to do everything.
Right. Okay. And then things get hard and you, you know, you, maybe you get to where you stop committing mortal sin. And then it's kind of a slog from there where you can actually give up this, the desire for sin, you know, these deep seated attachments that don't let go easily, you know, and like this, for this is like my struggle is reining in.
Yeah,
that's kind of, wrangling's a good verb.
I like it.
That's my
we're cowboys
my
now.
Appetites, yeah. Okay. And I know I have learned to say no to my appetites most of the time, but forming them is so hard. You know, the fact that I still desire things in a disordered way sometimes, you know, like I do want to eat 5 pieces of chocolate cake.
Or
I want to.
Or how many times do we look back on some of the things that we used to do that was either stupid or like ridiculous, and we kind of glorify these sins? We
yes.
look back and say,
yes,
like,
that was like a thing I realized, like, oh, here, you know, I graduated from college, you know, it really, we both turned our lives around after college. But I would still kind of brag about how big of a sinner I used to be. Like, oh, let me tell you the stuff I used to do, you know, and I was reveling in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was glorifying my sins
mm-hmm.
instead of, putting them. It was just a disordered thing. And I will tell you though, that I can look back, and this is, I think, a healthy exercise, and say, you know what? I don't desire, my appetites are more formed than they used to be. I don't desire.
What do you credit that to?
Grace.
Yes.
Striving for virtue. I mean, my prayer life is
fasting.
Fasting is a big part of it. But it's, I think it's, if you are earnest in your desire to grow in holiness, it might be hard and you might just think that you're failing and failing and failing, but I assure you that you're not. I'll bet if you say, I've done nothing but fail for the last 5 years, I'll bet you can actually look back at yourself 5 years ago and say, you know what? Actually, I don't, like, yeah, I used to do that. I don't do that anymore. You know, I'll bet you there are a lot of things that you can say that you are better at. You don't notice.
Let me hit you with this quote. I want to get your thoughts on it. He says, people would like much to be able to sin without being damned.
Totally. Oh, if that was an option, it would be popular. Popular.
I mean, isn't that interesting, though? I mean, like,
if you could, like,
because I can even think, like, oh, I can't. This is the idea of, like, being like an imperfect and a perfect understanding of a love of God, right? You know, there's this imperfect love of God, which is like, I'm just worried about being damned. I don't want to go to hell.
I don't want to be a saint. I just don't want to go to hell.
Right. And then there's a perfect love of God, which is the deep love that you have for God, that you desire not to offend him and that you want to love him.
Right. Right.
And want to be closer to him. And anything that takes you away from him, you don't want to do.
Right. Which has nothing to do with anything you'll benefit or not. It's simply to do with
the fact
that God is the greatest good. And like, your love for him compels you to a service.
This quote of seeing without being damned really gets to you when you are about to commit sin and you're thinking, well, it's not mortal sin. It's just venial.
Mm-hmm.
And how you can just de-escalate it in your head. Well, yeah.
Or what that used to get me was, well, I already need to go to confession.
Yeah, the sin of presumption.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm already going to go to confession on Sunday because I already need to go. Like, I already lost my, I already lost, what's the grace? God, the grace. I didn't get a lot of sleep this last weekend.
Sanctifying grace.
Sanctifying grace. I already lost sanctifying grace in my soul. Like, may as well, like, have a good time until confession on Saturday. You know, like, that used to get me.
Yeah. Yeah, sin of presumption.
Yeah.
But I also want to, you know, give you guys hope. If you, because what'll happen is, like, even if you put mortal sin out of your life, or you're living a virtuous life, all of a sudden you'll slip up again and you'll be like, oh,
What
was that? I've not struggled with that in forever. Do not despair. Like, the worst thing you can do is despair and lose hope. This is like a double whammy that the devil does, right? He causes you, you know, he'll tempt you
to
sin.
He is good at double whammy.
Yeah, and then make you fall into despair where you won't go to confession. And
right.
So don't do that. Do not do that. Get back to confession, and then the Lord is like waiting for you in open arms to welcome you back. So one other thing he's talking about, though, even whenever it's talking about venial sin, he's talking about, like, you know, so we're eliminating,
which is really where the whole of, like, life holiness of holiness begins.
Yeah. Yeah. And he talks about, he says, one should not voluntarily this is kind of goes back to what Juan was just saying. One should not voluntarily nourish the will to continue to preserve any kind of venial sin, because this would be too great of a wickedness to choose knowingly to keep in our conscience a thing so displeasing to God as a willfulness to offend him. To understand, like, even though a small sin, which you were talking about, like, if we understood what really sin was, it would be, you know, it would be devastating,
right?
But to understand that, oh, it's just a small sin, but to knowingly know that this is going to displease God and then choose to do it anyway is just,
yeah. I feel like there is a, you're like, you have the shadow of grave matter here when you're saying, I know this sin is bad, it's a venial sin, I mean, but I know what it is. I'm going to keep it on purpose. Not because, oh, I really want this other piece of cake. It's different between saying, like, well, I know I said I was only going to have one. I am going to have a second piece of cake. You know, like, I'm not saying that's a venial sin. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But to say, like, you know what? I'm not even going to try to root out that second piece of cake because I know it's only a venial sin. So now I think that is the fact that it's like you're saying, no, I'm not, I'm going to preserve this venial sin. You're now loving a sin more than God. So I think that is the shadow of grave matter. you could actually have grave matter there, because you're saying, I'm going to intentionally, on purpose, choose a lesser good over a higher good, you know, and like, I'm going to shun God knowingly, on purpose, so I can have this venial sin in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, to me, it's the shadow of grave matter.
So in order to continue doing this, if you're listening on the radio right now, go to our podcast, thecatholicmanshow.com, because we're going to talk about the necessity of prayer and the devout life outside of the podcast, or outside of the radio show. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
So he goes through.
What do you think about that? Before, like, we just keep going.
I've thought about this as well.
Have you?
Like, yeah, because I have. Because like,
just now occurred. Like,
no, I've thought about this before because I'm a sinner, and I just like want to like
succumb to a venial sin, and then it's another thing to say I'm going to save and protect that venial sin because I love it so much. It's like now you're choosing a venial sin.
What do I have to do to not go to hell?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that seems to me that, like, you're now loving sin more than God. It's not that you have a weakness that you're succumbing to of this venial sin over and over again. I'm on purpose venial sinning, you know? And I'm going to go out and look for venial sins to do. I mean, it's sort of like this. This is a bad analogy, but
I like bad analogies.
No analogies are great, okay? So, like,
they all break down at some
point. Don't send me an email telling me how bad you think
it's
of analogies.
David at stmichaelradio.com.
That is, in fact, my email. And, like, you won't get a response, okay?
Believe me, I will let you know. You will not get it. I email him at that email and don't get responses.
Right.
So.
I mean, like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
Like, just because you have my email doesn't mean you get a response. Okay. Like, I don't owe you anything. Okay. But it's sort of like, it might be, you say, I would like to dress up for Mass. And then you wake up in the morning and you say, you know what? I'm not going to put on a suit. I'm too tired. I'm just going to wear like some regular clothes. I'm gonna wear like just some really. Flip flops are easier. I'm just gonna wear flip flops. I know I shouldn't. I'm just gonna do it though anyway because it's easier and I'm tired. Okay, that's one thing. It's a different thing to say, you know what? I'm gonna wear flip flops on purpose to disrespect the Mass.
Who's thinking that?
Well, nobody's thinking that. But like, let's say it's one thing to like not dress up for Mass, and then it's another thing to dress up. To dress yourself down on purpose in order to be disrespectful to the Mass. Okay, that's analogous to saying it's one thing to say like, I know I shouldn't have this second piece of cake, but I'm just weak and I'm going to do it. And then it's another thing to say, you know what? Today, I'm going to have two pieces of cake on purpose because it's a venial sin and it's only because I'm going to do it on purpose because it's only venial. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I'm like looking for sins to commit. I'm like trying to commit a sin on purpose. So it's one thing to like wear flip-flops to Mass because you just like were lazy and didn't have the energy to put on your dress shoes. And then it's another thing to say, you know what? I'm going to try to disrespect the Mass. So I'm going to dress myself. I'm going to show up like a slob on purpose. So that's kind of what saving, if you're saying like, no, I'm going to save this sin, I'm going to protect it. That's what you're doing. It's worse than what it sounds at first because you're like saying, no, like I'm going to do this sin on purpose. I'm not even tempted right now to do it, but I refuse to root it out. I'm not even experiencing the tempt. There's not even any cake here. But I'll tell you what, as soon as I see some cake, I'm going to eat too much of it.
Have you been eating a lot of cake recently?
No, but cake is like one of my favorite things.
Oh, okay.
And so it's kind of like my thing that I talk about.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I talk about it a lot with liturgical living.
Yeah, you know? You did.
I mean, let's be honest. Like cake, it's a great thing because it also represents like the height of like, hey, if there's cake at a place, you're celebrating something. You don't just have cake. He's like, hey guys, I made a cake. It's like, you just made a cake. Yeah, I don't even know why. Just have it. You want to eat some? It's like, well, all right. It's like, if you're eating cake for no reason, doesn't it feel weird? You know what, Adam? I don't think so either. No, it doesn't.
No. So we've
sometimes
focused.
I'll put candles on it anyway. Yeah, just like to blow them out. Yeah. Sing to myself.
Yeah. So we talked about kind of like the so when we're entering the devout life, we talked kind of about the negative, right? We talked about like the avoiding of sin.
Yeah.
The positive side is like the increase in prayer life, right? It is like entering into a relationship with Christ. And this is something that I've been, before we actually get into this, let me detract this before I even start.
Great. This is, I'm really rubbing off on you.
Yeah.
Before I say this, I want to say that I don't mean it.
Yeah. So this is something that I've been thinking about recently about my prayer life.
Okay.
Because we've had, you know, I do sets.
We've talked about prayer a lot lately, I think. It just seems like it's come up in our episodes a lot.
It's because every time, like the last few times that it's been my topic, it's been about prayer. And probably because like I've been trying to get things sorted out.
Praying for a prayer life.
Yeah. Just living on a prayer.
Jesus, teach me to pray.
So
that's in the Bible, you know.
Holy Spirit, teach us to pray.
Or Jesus, teach us to
pray. So I'm curious. So I have these regimented prayers, right?
Good.
I pray in the morning, pray in the afternoon, pray in the evening. I have specific prayers that we pray.
You do it three times a day? You pray?
I try to.
Like on the hour?
I try to as soon as I wake up. I tried to at noon for the Angelus. I try at 3 p.m.
We have been
divine.
Good about praying the Angelus lately. It's really because of my wife. I think she must have like decided like,
we're
hey,
gonna
we're
going
to do this because now my kids will come out or come into like. And that's one of the things I love about working from home is, you know, like
that's what I said.
Being
I,
able to pray the Angelus.
I
at
said
noon with
I
my
said
kids.
That on our show like 6 months ago.
I don't think I was praying the Angelus with the kids.
I said that about
ago.
Me. The one
no,
of the
you
things,
did.
One of the things I liked about. Working from home
it was,
is that I get to pray the Angelus.
It was only like 3 weeks ago that I finally, no, less than that. It was like probably 10 days ago that I finally was able to actually be the one to lead the Angelus because I got it all memorized
right.
Finally. Like what do you, the order of it all.
Right.
I knew it before then. I just didn't have it memorized. Anyway, sorry. Keep going. I'll let you go for like 5 more seconds before
okay.
I interrupt you again.
Okay. So I have all these regimented prayers, but I came to this realization that I wasn't actually spending like time in relationship with Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. I was saying these prayers out of obligation or out of like I knowing that I need to out of justice, but I wasn't actually spending time meditating or having contemplative prayer where it was a growing my relationship with Jesus.
Uh-huh.
It like started really bothering me, right? It started like I realized
you're probably praying good things though, you know, like but
right,
keep
like
going. It's not like you're nonchalantly going through your prayers.
No, no. I mean, it's like I'm
at
taking
least
my,
not on purpose,
right? But
if,
I'm
you, if you're prayer, like me, you don't do it on purpose anyway, you know.
I take my prayer life seriously.
Yes,
but I was realizing like the only prayers I'm doing are the ones that I've carved out time to do. Like they are premeditated. I know what I'm going to be praying. Like I'm not spending time with Jesus. And it was like bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I've tried, you know, successfully and unsuccessfully, to spend more time in just quiet in the mornings.
Uh-huh. How's it going? It's hard. It's hard.
To do,
especially if you're just starting, that's really hard.
I don't know. I don't know.
Mean, I've talked about this before. I've said it many times on the show when we did Exodus 90. That's one of the things, you know, is that 20 minutes of contemplative prayer every day. And it just totally, it like rocked my world. Totally, mm-hmm. totally changed my life. And it's something that you just is irreplaceable. I mean, I just cannot even imagine my prayer life without that 20 minutes. It's almost like my prayer life, I have these, you know, I still say these prayers I say in the morning. But that it's like they are just like the building blocks.
I just now, get like I get to the point where it's like, how much more can I time do I have? You know, if you're doing the Auxiliary Christian Orum, if you're doing the Rosary, if you're doing the Divine Mercy Chaplet, if you're doing the Angelus, if you're doing like all these different prayers throughout the day, it's like how much more like time can I actually give?
Yeah,
and the answer is more.
So like
I'm just bad.
So there is a point where continued like time in prayer would be disordered.
Sure, if it takes away from your vocation or your job or things like
you know, and there have been times where it's like, it just didn't work out. You know, like I'm praying and then all of a sudden something happens with, like, I have to stop praying. You know, Pamela needs all something happened, like one of the girls peed on the floor or something, you know, and like I have to go help because like the baby's trying to like walk over there and
right
you know, it's like a crisis. Okay, there are real crises that take place in the Niles house sometimes, I will tell you.
Yeah, I know all about those.
But for the most part, the hardest thing, this is like one of those things that I've come to learn and I'm just terrible at, is that like one of the keys to a prayer life is going to bed on time.
I cannot overstate
that point.
You know what?
Going to bed on time is what fuels a good prayer life.
You know what? Since my family is gone right now, they're visiting my in-laws up in Oregon, and since they've been gone, because I don't have that time that I normally would spend with my wife, I have been getting to bed on time.
I'm the complete opposite. I'm such a, like, when my kids aren't here, I stay up to like 1 a.m. I don't even know what I'm doing. I was like, I am not kidding. This is so shameful. I'm so embarrassed about this. The last time that happened, I think I watched like 2 movies. Okay. It was like,
oh, dude,
like 8 o'clock and I was like, I'm going to watch a movie. And then when it was over, I was like, I'm going to watch another one. And I was, by the time the movie was over, it's like my brain was just like, oh, like overstimulated. I could like literally feel that was in my, I could feel it in my body, how stupid of an idea it was and how just dumb I am. I was so embarrassed about it. I actually went to confession. It wasn't a mortal sin, but I was like, I have to, like, I'm not going to let that, for me, like the spiritual battle is like a real battle, like trench warfare. Like how much ground have you given?
Right.
Like, sometimes you do things and you just know, like, I gave up some ground today. I'm going to go take it back. And I'm going to go to confession.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I'm going for that.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm going for. I'm going to confess some other stuff. But, like, that's the reason.
I'm going.
All right. So, like, St. Michael bagged me up here because...
Well, I've been actually, like, going to bed early, but getting up super early.
That's the key, man. Like, getting up early... There's like, it starts your whole day the right way.
Yes, because you can start praying, and then like, and then I get a bunch of, like, I was at the office at like 6 o'clock in the morning most of the time since I've been gone, and like, my office isn't open till 9, so I have 3 hours that I get to knock out uninterrupted, like, without.
By the time everybody else gets there, it's like, you have no idea how much I've done today.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
like I ran 4 miles.
It's like
I built a rocking chair this morning.
Where'd you get the wood? Father Pratt had wood in his office. I just broke it down.
I found he had some lovely trim boards in his office. And those, I steamed them and they bent just right.
Yeah,
and perfect. They're nice.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, so.
But, so like, for someone like you or someone like who's starting a prayer, like contemplative prayer, I don't know how long you've been doing it. I mean, but, one thing that like happened to me and it probably happens to most people is I'm praying now, like 20 minutes seems like a long time, or however long it is, however long you decide to pray, it's going to seem like a long time. You're going to be tempted in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, what do you do? I have nothing else to pray. I don't know what, like I've said all the stuff. And so just, you know, like if I was St. Francis de Sales, who's like offering very practical advice, I would say like, don't say anything. Just, and this is like, it took me about a year to really learn how to do this. And I'm still obviously learning it. And
you basically have perfected it.
I mean, it's like pretty close, but like I've got like maybe 0.5%.
For the humility factor, I'm not quite there.
But yeah, exactly. It's just like resting in his love. Like, just this idea of, like, you know, like thinking about how much he loves me, and that he loves you so much, you can, like, if you were aware of it, you could physically feel it. I mean, it would, like, overwhelm your senses.
Yeah.
Just like what he was saying about hell.
Mm-hmm.
Hell will overwhelm your, I mean, it will be all of your senses.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, his love is so penetrating. And just contemplating the idea, like, is it more important to be loved, or is it more important to love? The answer is it's more important to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is, first of all, it's like a first principle action of that, like, our being is that we are loved. We would have no being if we weren't loved. You know, God loves us first, and then we love in return. That's the reason we are even capable of loving, is because he first loved us. So, like, just realizing and just contemplating his love, and just, like, resting in, and then just being totally quiet, not thinking of anything, just, like, sitting there, sort of like you would do in adoration. Like, you don't have to say anything. Mm-hmm. You just go to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
waste time with him.
Yeah. And it is weird and hard to do. But, like, that's what I would say to do. And chances are, if you do that for, like, 60 seconds, something else will come up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into a couple of these real quick, because we haven't even done this.
Yeah, good idea.
I don't know how long are we going, Jim?
Who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Look, they can stop listening if they want.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so one of the things he says, so if you're thinking, like, hey, I'm living a pretty moral life. I'm not really even sinning. I'm not even a sinner, hardly. Like, barely even
sin. I don't even do that.
He says,
I mean, like, just some venial sins.
Barely.
Like, barely. I mean.
Yeah. He says, prayer puts our intellect into clarity of the divine light and brings forth our weaknesses. So he understands, he says, if that's what you're thinking, you need to be praying more. It's like that idea, or like what our Lord said to Faustina about, here she is, she's living a very moral life,
like,
her prayer
life. One of
life.
The holiest people ever.
And he says, look how far away you are.
I mean,
from
God
me.
Called her the apostle of his mercy.
Right.
I mean, like,
and
that
he says,
is
look
a
how
pretty,
far away.
It's pretty big.
So
yeah, look how far you are from me. That was, like, so powerful in the book.
It was like, so it's the understanding of knowing yourself, right? In order to know yourself, you need to be able to see yourself as God sees you.
Yeah.
Which is very, very hard. But the more intimate you become with God, the more you can realize all of your defects.
Yeah.
So he said, so that's one of the things he says. Humility. He also says, focus your main prayer time at the beginning of the day when you are rested, which is what we've talked about.
Yeah.
You know, we actually just said that just not too long ago, mm-hmm. but he says, you know, so he talks about the main time for prayer, he says, is before, dinner time, which dinner he actually means lunch, because supper is dinner for them back in the day.
Yeah,
so it's but he says, if you're going to pray for an hour, pray it right before lunch, because lunch is your big hearty meal of the day. And so he says, you know, say your morning prayers, but your main prayer of the day should be before lunch.
That is interesting advice, because sometimes when you, like, I always pray right when I get up.
Right. And, I do too.
There's certainly, like, a challenge some days more than others, you know, depending on how successful I was at going to bed early. I'm, like, groggy, and, like, it is difficult, sometimes impossible, to actually focus on an idea. And it's like, very often I'll find it's not till the end of my, like, the very end of when I'm praying. I mean, now it's time for me to go do other things, because I have, things I have to do. That it's like, all right, well, I had, like, 2 minutes of real prayer today. And in my opinion, like, the other minutes, typically it takes me about 30 minutes to pray, but, like, between my, like, the prayers I say, it's like those other 28 minutes were worth those two. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to have it where it wasn't just 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, I strive for more than that.
Right.
So it's still good, but in the morning it is a challenge. That's interesting
that he says that. I know, that's what I thought too. Because most of the spiritual directors you hear say, like, your best time of prayer is early in the morning, you know, when you first wake up. But anyway, so he says that. Here's the next one that I struggle with a lot. He says, do not rush to say many prayers. but teach yourself to say what you say lovingly.
That is so true.
So there's like, how many times do you, or at least for me, I'll be like, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee, blessed art thou among women, blessed art thou, holy Mary, mother of God, pray for us sinners now at the hour of death, and like go to the next one, because like I'm just like, I know I have 15 minutes or 12 minutes to pray this rosary, or I'm not going to get my rosary in today.
Yeah.
So I am just flying through the rosary without really meditating, without really thinking about what I'm saying.
Yeah. That is like a, I think, I don't know if it's American or whatever. It's certainly, I know it, is that we have this like, Catholics want to complete a rosary instead of pray a rosary. In my opinion, it is not that important if you actually finish the rosary. If you pray half of a rosary well, if you pray one decade really well, that is 100,000 times better than finishing the kind of rosaries that I often pray, where I finish them and go like, did I pray the rosary? What mysteries? You know, like, I have prayed so many rosaries in my life where I did zero contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
I was 100% mentally distracted the whole time. I mean, it's zero prayer that I offered, but at least I can check the box. I prayed a rosary today. You know what I mean?
Right.
I hate that. And I don't, like, some days I don't know what to do about it, because I'll say, ugh. It always catch me at the end of the mystery. It's like, oh, I'm doing the glory be. Like, I didn't even think about the crowning with thorns.
Right.
I was thinking about something else, you know, completely.
Thinking about cake.
But I tell you what, this next one here on the carrying of the cross, I'm going to dominate it. I am going to really.
What kind of cake do I want?
Right. He's like, you know what? I do think Bavarian cream icing is better if it's a dark chocolate cake as opposed to like a regular chocolate cake. but that, I mean, and I'm not kidding. I was like, all right, here we go. Our Father, who's like somewhere else. And now it's like, that's how quickly I get distracted. I know that we all have a guardian angel. It used to be a more common image where you've got the good angel and the bad angel on your shoulder. I'm almost sure that that's true. Like, I have a demon assigned to me as well. And he thinks that he, like, just makes fun of me all the time for how easily distracted I am when I pray. I mean,
yeah,
he's like, hey, like a cat with a laser pointer. Mm-hmm. That's gotta be me when I pray. I hope it's not just me. Actually, I hope it is just me. I hope other people don't have that problem.
Yeah.
But it's just terrible. But I like also have, through that struggle, have come to the realization that like, there's no need to finish the rosary. It is better to just slow down. Stop. Like, if I really actually want to get a lot out of the Our Father, there is one thing I can do. It's just like, if you want a silver bullet, here it is. Slow down. That is it. Slow down. I mean, it stops. It breaks your rhythm. It breaks your, like, I think it breaks your memory, muscle memory. And like, you actually have to say the words.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it disrupts this pattern of distraction that is like a habit for me. It is.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just can do that, just slow down, pray slowly. You'll have a lot to do in your 20 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, like, not that I think you should be saying Our Fathers during your 20 minutes of silent contemplation, if that's what you're doing. But like, who cares if you finish the rosary? Pray it for 20 minutes and stop.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a good 20 minutes, that's way better.
Speaking of the rosary, the next one he says, which is very interesting. He says, the rosary is a great starting point, but if you have advanced to contemplative prayer, and I say contemplative because I think he actually uses interior, but this is what he means, is contemplative prayer. You should always keep that as your principal place.
I have not read any of these things, but like, it's been working out really well.
Yeah, I mean, so he's saying, so he
contemplative prayer is the primary.
Is the
right.
So contemplative
it's
prayer
a deeper
is,
union of
is
prayer.
A, yeah, is a higher form of prayer than meditative prayer. So he says, like, if you are at the point in your spiritual life that you can have contemplative prayer on a regular basis, that should be your principal type of prayer. Now, if you can also pray the rosary or another type of meditative prayer on top of your contemplative prayer, that is a very good But but contemplative prayer should be your. So he uses the example of like, if you're about to have to go to work, and you have 15. Well, he didn't use 15 minutes, but he said basically, if you're about to have to go to work and you're about to, and you still have your prayer time, and you have time to either pray, like have a contemplative prayer or the rosary, you always use contemplative prayer. And if you don't get your rosary in that day, it's better to have the contemplative prayer.
Yeah. And it's not like you can just force contemplative prayer. You can't just say like,
no.
All right, and now let's do the contemplation, right? Because that's like that's like saying, all right, and now we'll do the Marian apparition. Okay. That's just not the way it works.
Well, it's like, and now we will do 400-pound bench presses. It's like, no. You don't just get to a 400-pound.
Well, I mean, if you can bench 400 pounds, you can just sit down and bench it, but
most people have to work their way to 400 pounds.
But sometimes, like even if you often do have true contemplative prayer, it doesn't mean that you can just sit down. I mean, it takes, I think, time to like, all right, you start. It's like a process of like getting your mind in the right frame, you know, setting your person, your soul in the right frame of mind. And then like chewing on, you know, you start with something more natural, and then you like slowly ascend like the ladder into contemplative prayer. It's not like you can just beam me up, Scotty.
Right.
I mean, some saints, like, so I think you can get to a point actually where you do that,
right,
where you can actually go to like ecstatic prayer away. Yeah, I think you're right. But that is, you know, it's like, if you can do that, like you should be listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, you should probably have your own. Okay.
This
is a good point. I'm sorry. I know I'm like totally dominating this episode, but
no,
like,
that's good.
I have so many awesome things to say today. Like, this is something that Father Sean O'Brien, he told me that like he got to the point where he's like kind of thinking like, yeah, the rosary is good, but it's not actually what you should be doing in adoration. And I was kind of surprised when he said that, because I was thinking, I'm pretty sure there's a indulgence for praying the rosary in adoration, and I like those. I like
them. I'm a big fan. Yeah,
I like a lot.
I like to buy them,
but right, yeah, you can pay for them. Did you know that? Like, ever since the Middle Ages, you've been able to just like
Adam at St. Michael Catholic,
right? You can just pay for them. But anyway, like, you should, when you pray the rosary in adoration,
that was a joke. I just joke. Like, it was a joke.
People know it's a joke.
Well.
Just if you clarity. Don't know that was a joke, like, you have no sense of humor. Come on. Life is hilarious. But when you pray the rosary, you should, I think, be in the frame of mind that you're ready and willing to abandon the rosary at any time.
Okay, dude.
That's so, what for this.
Like, that's the next one that we're talking about. It says when you're saying vocal prayers, if your sense if you sense your heart drawn and invited to interior or mental prayer, do not refuse to follow it, but let your spirit glide gently into that direction. So,
see what I'm saying?
So. And that's something
I was just
also,
talking about number four, but you read number five.
Well, because it actually bleeds right into that.
I mean, yeah, it is.
And that's something also that I think that is tough for men, because you want to be in control. You're trying to be in control of your prayer life. This is a whole denial of yourself, right? So it's like, no, I need to pray the rosary. And then, like, God is, like, calling you into a deeper union with him. You're like, no, I'm trying to pray the rosary, God. Like, I'm trying to become closer to you. Please stop. And this is just a whole, like,
would you let me do it?
Would you let
Jesus?
Me? Yeah, exactly. And this is just this whole, at least, maybe it's not, I think for men, probably, for the most part, but at least for me, I mean, it's like a lot of times I'll catch myself trying to control my prayer life, trying to control like how I'm supposed to grow closer to God. And that's just something that I think a lot of men struggle mm-hmm. with, is not being in control.
Yeah. That is a challenge, because we just aren't wired that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the last one, he actually has like 10 or 11, I think, but I only picked 6 because I didn't want this to be a 7-hour episode.
You hated the last 10, like the last 4?
No, I just didn't want it to be a 7-hour episode. If you miss morning prayer and it is evening, you should pray. That was a typo. it says, like, probably before some book of devotion with penance that may settle the rest of the shortcoming. So he basically says, if you go throughout the whole day and you realize, oh, I haven't prayed today, you should pray, but then also do, like, pray and then add a little bit more of, like, something from your devotional book or something like that, but then also do some kind of penance for not praying throughout the day. Mm-hmm. Because and he understands the wisdom of St. Francis is saying, he's saying, like, he knows that habitual prayer is important. Having a regular prayer life, a scheduled prayer life, is very important. And when you abandon that prayer life voluntarily, this habit that you're forming, you need to correct yourself back to, you know, getting back into that prayer life, which will cause, which you have to do through,
well, and
through penance.
I'm just reading it. It looks like he makes a distinction between voluntary and involuntary. Like,
yes.
So if you, because sometimes, you know, like,
well, but
I mean, for instance, you were on your whatever, on your way, like, your car breaks down, and I'll tell you one time, I like a year and a half ago was trying to get my 20 minutes of prayer in while I was in the urgent care, and then they whisked me away to the hospital because I had a collapsed lung, and I, like, didn't get my 20 minutes in that day because,
well, you're probably going to hell.
I was like, going to the hospital and stuff. You know, like, that's kind of a crazy example, but, like, sometimes stuff happens when you're trying to, like, sure. Especially, this is what makes me nervous about scheduling your prayer right before lunch and not first thing in the morning. I might give it a try, but I know that the later I schedule my prayer, mm-hmm. like, it's a increasing percentage of me not doing it.
Right. I think the reason why he says it before lunch, though, is because, like, well, you don't get to eat until you pray.
Yeah, but
and, like, if lunch is your big meal, like, in his in that time period, lunch was the big meal. So, and dinner was very, like, very small.
Yeah.
So, like, if you are hungry and you're ready to eat, you pray for an hour beforehand, and you can't eat until you get that knocked out.
Yeah, I just think I think it's interesting. I haven't ever tried it that way. I just know. I just know that later in the day, the more likely it is that I don't do it,
right?
Because something comes up, something happens that is outside of my control. You know, like, kind of a, you know, the other side of this control issue. Like, I do want to control parts of my prayer life. I want to control the outside world from interfering with my prayer life. Mm-hmm. And the later in the day that goes, the less control I have over that, protect, unless, you know, I can't guard it as well,
right?
So, but yeah, I mean, you have to, I think it's important to, like, take these ideas in a way that, like, works for you,
right?
Because
you should read this book. Read this book. It will it's one of those
fantastic
it'll change your life books.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of people,
Jim, you should read it.
Jim's going to read it.
Jim he's definitely going to read it.
This is Kevin O'Brien of EWTN's Theater of the Word. I'm excited also to teach middle school and high school literature, speech, and drama with homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. Your student can meet with me online for a live, interactive class. Whether you take apologetics with John Martinoni or grade school with Jackie De La Viaga or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, online Catholic learning for your homeschooling family is available for you.